It is nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT, broadcasting on 100.1 FM. It is your public radio station here in beautiful downtown Kodiak, Alaska, where we have fair skies, 49 degrees, and blustery westerly winds. Right now they are steady at 16 at the airport, gusting to 26. They do have 10 miles of visibility at the airport, and the Weather Service is calling for sunny skies for today and tomorrow, with clear skies overnight. Look for these gusty winds to be as high as 35 today and as high as 45 tonight. Coming up on the Midday Report, Petersburg saw a record-breaking amount of rain and also some landslides that were less often seen. And the Anchorage Assembly heard testimony from one of two of four people it subpoenaed to talk about an election challenge last year. Those stories and more after national headlines.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. Former President Donald Trump is on trial for fraud in New York City. His arrival at the courthouse today was met with a familiar presence of heavy security and throngs of media cameras. The Republican running for president again seized the moment to denounce the allegations State Attorney General Letitia James laid out in the $250 million civil case against him.
This has to do with election interference, plain and simple. They're trying to damage me so that I don't do as well as I'm doing in the election.
He made the allegations without providing evidence of election interference. Cameras are not allowed inside the courtroom during the trial, but NPR's Jimena Bustillo is there with details on the witnesses.
Testifying on the first day is Donald Bender, a longtime Trump Organization tax consultant. He answered questions about the operations of the Trump Organization. He is one of 28 witnesses the Attorney General's office is preparing to bring forward. Also on the witness list is the former president himself. Trump came to the courtroom today, although it was not required. This is one of four lawsuits the former president is facing in New York as he's seeking re-election. Jimena Bustillo, NPR News, New York Supreme Court.
The White House says it's staying out of a potential effort to remove House Speaker Kevin McCarthy from his position. NPR's Windsor Johnston reports McCarthy is facing increasing backlash from a group of hard-right Republicans.
Republican Congressman Matt Gaetz is leading an effort to oust McCarthy because he worked with Democrats to pass a short-term government spending bill over the weekend. White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre was asked by reporters if the administration supports Gaetz's motion to vacate the chair.
That is absolutely nothing to do with us. That is something for House Republicans to figure out.
Gaetz is stoking anger among GOP hardliners, including pro-Trump MAGA Republicans. He's doing it by accusing McCarthy of striking a backdoor deal with House Democrats to move ahead with legislation to provide additional aid for Ukraine, a provision that both parties support in a long-term spending bill. Windsor Johnston, NPR News, Washington.
The Nobel Prize for Physiology or Medicine is going this year to two scientists pivotal to the development of COVID-19 vaccines. They are Drew Weissman and Kathleen Curico, who spoke with NPR's Here and Now.
I feel elated. It's a real privilege to receive this award. And, you know, the very important thing that this vaccine is saves so much life and is very safe and a very good vaccine.
The COVID-19 vaccines are credited with saving millions of lives. The Dow Jones Industrial Average has closed down 74 points. You're listening to NPR News.
NPR News is presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor, llama al 907-481-2400.
For KMXT, I'm Terry Haynes. The Petersburg area saw a record-breaking amount of rain in late September. Now, mariners and pilots passing through a remote area are seeing the consequences. KFSK's Shelbeat Herbert has more on a landslide in Leconte Bay that spilled timber into an area with high boat traffic.
If a tree falls in the forest and nobody's around to hear it, does it make a sound? Maybe that question is best left to the philosophers. But if hundreds of trees tumble off a mountainside, straight into the ocean, who would find out about it first? In remote southeast Alaska, mariners and pilots, they were the first to notice the aftermath of a huge landslide on the mainland near Leconte Bay in the last week of September. Personnel at the nearest ranger district in Petersburg were unaware that it happened at all. The Tongass National Forest spans 16.7 million acres, the largest national forest in the United States. It's a lot to keep track of. Doug Reamer is the owner of Nordic Air, a Petersburg-based charter flight business. He was piloting a tour around Leconte Bay when he noticed the telltale signs of a slide.
Mostly just timber everywhere, and this slide was pretty dramatic because it didn't just land in one spot. It just brought a whole bunch of trees down and it just ripped all the branches off of them and then pulled the bark off of them and everything like that, and it just littered trees all over.
And that debris can be a dangerous problem. Floating wood can damage or even sink small vessels and marine infrastructure. Glorianne Wolin is Petersburg's harbor master. She says she and her team have been getting reports about the slide from northbound vessels all week. And now, they're trying to fish out as much flotsam as they can before it can clog up the Wrangell Narrows in front of town.
It was mostly big, big root wads. And we knew something had let loose because there was rocks and sand and dirt and stuff that was still attached. But we end up seeing it and reacting as it occurs.
Landslides are alarming when they happen, even in the most remote areas. Climate change and the resulting wetter weather are making them more common in southeast Alaska. Brian Besnick is a meteorologist with the National Weather Service in Juneau. He says south central southeast has seen record-breaking rains in the last few weeks, and it's probably no coincidence that the slide happened when it did.
There was an atmospheric river that was pushing through the south central panhandle during that time frame, and it has turned out that it was a very rainy end of the week across the area. Petersburg reported 4.47 inches on the 21st, which, looking at the records, would be the rainiest day on record for that day. So over those 2 days, we've received 7.02 inches.
Now, to put that number in perspective, the normal monthly precipitation in the Petersburg area is 14.35 inches of rain. It got half of that in a single weekend. Besnick says those heavy rains will probably bear down for weeks to come. But there's no telling how long it'll take for all the debris to get flushed away. In Petersburg, I'm Shelby Herbert.
The Anchorage Assembly heard testimony on Friday from two of the four people it subpoenaed to discuss an election challenge filed earlier this year. As Alaska Public Media's Wesley Early reports, it's the first time the two have spoken publicly about the complaint, which has prompted concern about whether city officials are interfering with elections.
Sammy Graham, former chief of staff to Anchorage Mayor Dave Bronson, says she wasn't trying to overturn results when she filed a complaint regarding this year's city election. Graham's complaint cited an unvetted policy sent to her by the city's IT director, Mark Dahl. The policy had to do with the use of USB drives to transfer election information, and Graham says she assumed it was a legitimate policy.
I read the whole policy. It was from the IT director. I took it at his word that that was the policy.
Graham was one of four people subpoenaed by the Anchorage Assembly to speak at the 90-minute meeting at City Hall. Assembly members say they need more information about what led up to the complaint, so they activated their subpoena powers to get answers. Already, the city ombudsman has concluded that Dahl sent Graham the complaint to impact the election, and Dahl has since resigned. As an election observer, Graham filed her complaint on April 11th, the same day Dahl sent her the policy she cited. Assembly Chair Chris Constant said the purpose of questioning Graham was not to implicate her in a crime, it was so the Assembly could get information on how to better update its election laws.
None of it is intended to be inquisitorial. This is not called an investigation. It's an inquiry as we move forward towards our Title 28 and other code changes.
During the meeting, Graham's attorney, Bill Ingoldson, emphasized that Graham wasn't trying to change the results of the election.
It never says anything in here about overturning the election, does it?
Not at all.
And in fact, it actually is a recommendation that some sort of procedure, like it sounds like the assembly is doing now, be adopted to ensure the integrity of these thumb drives, right?
Right.
The assembly also subpoenaed two other election observers who signed on to the complaint, as well as Dahl. One of the other observers, Daniel Smith, provided testimony stating that he only heard of the IT policy through Graham.
I was told by Ms. Graham she found it and therefore had no reason to doubt it.
Dahl and the other subpoenaed observer, John Henry, did not show up to the meeting. Their attorney said they needed more time to prepare for the assembly's questions. After the meeting, Constance said he's looking forward to hearing more testimony surrounding the challenge. Elections are run through the city clerk's office, which is meant to be nonpartisan. He says he's concerned at the implication that a mayoral appointee, like Dahl, could impact an election.
We have to figure out how to buffer and secure the elections from that kind of influence. And hopefully, you know, we never have this again, or in the next 10 years, we don't see any repeat of this.
He says he's concerned that similar challenges have been levied across the country to sow doubt in the election process.
This is a national campaign to create a lack of faith in our electoral processes, from the presidency and the run for the U.S. president right on down to local elections across the country. So I'm really glad we're here looking closely at our policies to make sure that kind of abuse never happens again.
He says the assembly will likely hear testimony from the other people it subpoenaed in the near future. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Wesley Early.
Home ownership is a financially unattainable dream for a lot of Alaskans. But there is a program that's been banging along for years that puts it in reach of families who can put in the time. Alaska Public Media's Jeremy Shea visited a construction site on the Kenai Peninsula to find out more.
Down a gravel road in Soldotna, construction workers are building the frames for the interior walls of a house.
Where's the wall going? Right here?
These construction workers, they're also the homeowners. During her day job as a secretary at Soldotna Montessori Charter School, Whitney Cavazos is usually behind a desk. This evening, she's behind a miter saw. She says it's exciting work.
But also a little scary because I've never built a house. I've never done construction. I assembled a cabinet in college, and that was about all I've done.
She and her husband are one of nine local families working together to build nine homes here along a lightly wooded creek. When they're all finished, then everyone can move in. Cavazos thinks that will be before Christmas next year. The home building program is through Rural Cap, a nonprofit supported mostly with federal and state grants with a mission of empowering low-income Alaskans. This work site is part of Rural Cap's Mutual Self-Help Housing Program, which connects families with low interest and subsidized mortgages from the federal government. Rural Cap also provides construction training and oversight. Each family commits to work at least 36 hours a week on the houses through completion. Volunteers can contribute too. All that labor replaces the down payments. Cavazos says it's a lot of hard work.
But we couldn't deny the benefits of building your house and getting that sweat equity.
The house she's building is energy efficient and 1,500 square feet. It will have four bedrooms, two bathrooms, and a two-car garage. She says without Rural Cap's program, a house like that might cost $250,000 more than what her mortgage will be. The nonprofit says the mortgages vary, but that families generally end up paying a little less in monthly mortgage payments than they pay in rent. Rural Cap has helped a lot of Alaskans with this program over the years. Rhonda Johnson learned about the program in 2009. To rent an apartment for herself and four kids, she used to have a lot of odd jobs. McDonald's, Walmart, bus driver, personal care assistant.
Oh no, there's no way I could have bought a home. Who has $30,000 to put down on a home?
It took about 7 years before she qualified, made it up the wait list, and finished her four-bedroom home a few miles away.
And then I had friends and built after mine. And I just helped build build, and I just love to volunteer.
Within a few years, she logged thousands of hours on 45 homes. She won a National Volunteer Award in 2021. Now, she works for Rural Cap on the program.
Now I'm a construction worker, and I like it.
She says it's fulfilling.
Just to move in and they could say it's their own home. I built it with my hands.
Chris Blanchard is the project manager on site.
I also am the teacher. I run the whole construction side of the program.
He used to be a general contractor. Now he says the most satisfying part of his job is teaching others a trade.
There are many homeowners that the first day here, they have no idea how to read a tape measure. And by now they're on their own, they're marking walls, they're cutting boards on their own. You know, by the time they get done with nine houses, they're almost journeyman carpenters.
Cavazos, the owner-builder behind the miter saw, says she's gotten pretty comfortable in the construction site, though she still measures three times before cutting. Reporting in Soldotna, with help from Adam Nicely, I'm Jeremy Shea.
People with disabilities or dementia often need extra help with the daily tasks like getting dressed and cooking food. And in Alaska, there's a shortage of care workers who can help people in their homes. So organizations in the state are piloting an app that helps people with disabilities or memory loss do more of these tasks on their own. Alaska Public Media's Rachel Cassandra has the story.
Alex Davidson is showing me his bedroom closet. He pulls out a new suit.
The new suit.
And in the corner of his room...
Alex, do you think you could show me how your shaver works?
...is his electric shaver. Davidson is 39 years old, has Down syndrome, and is on the autism spectrum. His mother, Donna Davidson, used to have to help him shave. She'd tell him when he'd shaved enough and remind him to check with his hands for spots he'd missed. But for the past few months, Alex has been using an app called MapHabit instead. With MapHabit, Donna can create customizable step-by-step guides for her son with videos and pictures.
This is how I shave.
We have one for shaving, one for toothbrushing, and one for flossing. When I'm standing there, he can do everything independently with the map and does a good job and is proud of himself.
For lots of families in Alaska, MapHabit could become indispensable. The state has a shortage of care workers and many families are stretched thin. Kim Champney is executive director of the Alaska Association on Developmental Disabilities. She says the app is filling a critical need, and she says tools like MapHabit will only become more important for people with disabilities as the labor shortage continues.
And so we need to think differently about support. How do we help people live the life they want to live if we are not going to have the same number of human beings available to provide that support? And that's where we can get really innovative.
She says apps like MapHabit, which are sometimes called assistive or enabling technology, are not meant to replace people. She likens it to the way that self-checkout lines in grocery stores allow stores to function with fewer employees.
What we need to do in our service system is really be thoughtful about when you need a human being in the room, when you need that human interaction, and when you don't.
Alaska was one of the first states to use MapHabit. Matt Golden is MapHabit's co-founder and CEO. He says Alaska's challenging geography made it a great place to pilot his app.
If we can pull this off in Alaska, we really can pull this off anywhere, and we're doing it.
He says research has shown the app helps people be more independent and reduces caregiver burden and stress. He says it doesn't just help people get through their daily tasks, it helps them get better at them. Golden says after using MapHabit for a while, even people with memory loss can start to learn and remember the steps.
because you're following it in that same order and you're seeing those same pictures, within a matter of weeks, you end up being able to perform those activities without even knowing it. And that's really the most innovative aspect of MapHabit, is this bypassing that damaged memory system that you consciously use to recall facts and information.
Now, Golden says the app is being used in 25 states. If the pilot programs in Alaska go well, Golden says he hopes MapHabit could be used statewide in schools and hospitals and covered under Medicaid. Back in the Davidson home, Donna says next she might create an app for Alex for how to heat up food. The last time he used a microwave, he cooked a cookie for 10 minutes and it nearly caused a fire. But Donna thinks it's essential for 39-year-old Alex to keep gaining independence.
As much as possible, as much as a person can have some independence, is really, really important. They can and want to feel proud of themselves just as much as those of us without specific disabilities.
And soon, more people with disabilities in Alaska might find new types of independence with the help of a little bit of technology. In Anchorage, I'm Rachel Cassandra.
A project to reestablish wood bison in Alaska has suffered a setback. The Lower Innoko Yukon River's wood bison herd experienced a major decline last winter, and as KUAC's Dan Bross reports, it's not the first time adverse weather has impacted the herd.
Alaska Department of Fish and Game wood bison biologist Tom Seaton says the latest population survey shows the herd dropped over the last year from 150 to 72 animals, a decline he attributes to extreme winter weather with heavy snow on the ground from last October through the end of this past May.
It was just a bad combination of things. Difficult snow to get through to get to the forage, snow that lasted a long time, and snow that was quite deep.
Seaton says the animals that died included most of a group of 28 yearlings imported from Canada to the Innoko area in the summer of 2022. He says the current population of 72 wood bison is the lowest since state, federal, and tribal partners working to reestablish the animals in Alaska transplanted 130 from Alberta, Canada in 2015. Seaton emphasizes that the Innoko Yukon River's area herd has experienced other weather-driven fluctuations.
Had a couple years of slow growth and then a decline from around 140 to around 90, and then kind of a jump back up over 100 and then back down to 90-something, and then a couple jumps above 100 all the way up to 150 last year, and then now down to 70-some. And, you know, if we project that in the future, it could be anything. We could continue to have growth years or decline years, really dependent on just how the snow conditions stack up.
Meanwhile, planning continues to expand the effort to reestablish wood bison in Alaska. Seaton says the focus is on sites in the eastern interior where snow cover tends to be lighter.
So Yukon Flats, Lower Tanawha Drainage, and Upper Tanawha Drainage all have conditions that are more conducive to bison performance.
Seaton says they're working with local groups through a public planning process to identify a second wood bison restoration site to which animals could be transplanted as early as next summer. The wood bison restoration project is primarily paid for with federal Pittman-Robertson funds. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
Support for KMXT comes from Alaska's most advanced network. GCI's resilient and redundant network is keeping schools connected across the state. Details at gci.com/education.
There won't be a government shutdown, but what about funding for Ukraine? I'm Nova Safo with the Marketplace Minute. The Senate has begun procedural moves to consider more funding for Ukraine's battle against Russia's invasion. In the House, growing Republican opposition led to additional Ukraine aid being stripped from the stopgap government funding bill approved over the weekend. A federal appeals court has temporarily blocked a grant funding program at a venture capital firm, which assists businesses that are majority owned by black women. The court ruled the program is racially exclusionary. The Institute for Supply Management says the nation's manufacturing sector in September shrank for the 11th month in a row. Surveyed companies said they're controlling labor costs through attrition and hiring freezes. I'm Nova Safo with the Marketplace Minute.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Monday. It is the second day of October, the year 2023. The sun rose today at 8:15. It will set again at 7:40, giving us 11 hours and 25 minutes of daylight, a loss of 4 minutes and 56 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record high for this date was 61 degrees, set in 1937, and our record low temperature was 25, set in 1972. Currently 49 degrees, fair skies, gusting winds, west steady at 16 at the airport, and they are showing gusts to 26. Sunny skies for the rest of the afternoon and tomorrow too, and a 40% chance of rain on Wednesday, becoming partly sunny skies. For today, look for a high near 46 is all. Northwest winds 25, gusting to 35. Overnight low of 34, northwest winds 25, gusting to 45. Looking at our local tides, we have a high tide coming up. That will happen at 4:24 this afternoon here on the east side and be 10 feet, followed by a low tide at 10:59, call it 11 p.m., of minus 9/10, call it minus 1 foot. Over on the west side, your high tide will happen at 4:53, almost 5 p.m., and be 15.8 feet in Larsen Bay, followed by a low tide at 11:32 p.m., of minus 1.7 feet.
To celebrate National Walk Your Dog Week, the Humane Society of Kodiak and the Kodiak Animal Shelter are hosting a dog walk and pet costume contest on Saturday, October 7th. The walk begins at the Kodiak College at 10 a.m., and there are two routes to choose from, a 1-mile walk or a 2-mile walk. There will be refreshments, door prizes, and a photo booth for dogs and owners. Registration is available at kodiakanimalshelter.org or in person the day of the walk.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on...
Not quite there yet. Mariners, here is your forecast for Marmot Island to Sitkin Act to 15 nautical miles offshore. Small craft advisory through tonight with northwest winds at 25 knots for today and tonight. Seas to 6 feet, northwest 20 tomorrow with 5-foot seas, and on Wednesday, northeast 30, seas coming up to 12 feet. Over in the Shelikof Strait, small craft advisory through Tuesday with northwest winds to 30 knots, gusting to 45 knots out of bays and passes, and seas to 7 feet. For tonight, northwest 30, gusting to 45 out of bays and passes, and seas to 6 feet. And for tomorrow on our west side, northwest 25, diminishing to 15 in the afternoon, 4-foot seas, subsiding to 2 feet in the afternoon. However, Wednesday through Thursday on our west side, northeast 35 and seas to 9 feet. Well, just a quick programming note. Be sure to tune in tomorrow to Talk of the Rock when Jared Griffin will be speaking with Ellamy Tiller, Outreach Coordinator with the Kodiak Women's Resource and Crisis Center. October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month, so listen to tomorrow's Talk of the Rock and learn more about resources and opportunities to help with this important issue. That's tomorrow, right after the Midday Report at 12:30 here on KMXT. There will be a Board of Education work session tonight. That's happening at 6:30 p.m. in the District Services Conference Room. It will also be live streamed. Login information for that is posted on the Kodiak Island Borough School District website. Look under the Board of Education tab. For more information, contact the Secretary to the Board of Education at 486-7566. Still time to register for the 17th annual Run the Rock. Register online at kmxt.org for the 5K, 10K, half marathon, or marathon races. Then join us at Bear Valley Golf Course on Saturday, October 14th for the races. There will be door prizes, a post-race barbecue, and registration includes the famous Run the Rock t-shirt. Meetings coming up include Tuesday, tomorrow's meeting of the Women's Bay Area Service Board. They're having their meeting in the Women's Bay Fire Hall at 5:30 p.m. tomorrow. On Wednesday, the Joint Building Code Review Committee will be having its regular meeting in the Borough Conference Room at 3 p.m. And on Thursday, the Kodiak Island Borough Assembly will be having their regular meeting in the Assembly Chambers at 6:30 p.m.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT two times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. and during the midday report at 12:20. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.